three times in 2 Peter chapter 2 does the apostle call Lot righteous. And in the context, he's talking about God judging the wicked. And he said his point is going to be that God knows how also to rescue the godly from trial or from temptation. He uses Lot as an example of one whom God rescued from the city of Sodom right before God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah with fire and brimstone from heaven. So he's using Lot as an example here of one who was godly, one who was righteous, and who was rescued by God, even in the midst of a judgment that he was issuing upon these cities. In verse 6, it says, if he condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, this is 2 Peter 2, to destruction by reducing them to ashes, having made them an example to those who would live ungodly lives thereafter, and if he rescued righteous Lot, oppressed by the sensual conduct of unprincipled men, for by what he saw and heard, that righteous man, while living among them, felt his righteous soul tormented day after day by their lawless deeds. Then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation and to keep the unrighteous under punishment for the day of judgment. Last week we talked about Samson and how ungodly Samson was and how bad of a character Samson had and how he was so weak in so many ways, particularly in the lusts of the flesh. And yet at the end of his life, Samson served God and killed more Philistines in his last act of self-sacrifice as he called upon God to bring judgment upon the Philistines. So he died in faith. And he's listed in Hebrews chapter 11 as a man of faith. A man who in Hebrews 11 verse 39, it says, gained approval from God by the things which he did by faith. Even Samson, we made the point last week, lived by faith and gained approval from God. I conclude from that that Samson was saved in the end. Because of his faith, not because he was a man of great character, for he surely wasn't, and not because he was a man who lived righteously, for he certainly didn't. But at the end of his life, he demonstrated his faith and trust in God, and there may be indications that during his life even he had times of faith and trust in God. And so he's listed in Hebrews chapter 11 as a man who gained approval from God by his faith. Well, here's Lot, who's a little bit easier for us to understand as a righteous man. He lived with Abraham for quite a long time. In fact, when you look upon the board here and you see what we really know about Lot, we see Lot first in Genesis chapter 11. He's the nephew of Abraham. He's the son of Haran, who is Abraham's brother. And he left the city of Haran with Abraham after his father died. He left with Abraham for Canaan. Abraham was responding by faith to God's call, and Lot went with Abraham. And then there was a famine, and so he went down to Egypt with Abraham. And so he's traveling with this great man of faith, the father of the faithful, and no doubt being influenced very strongly by him to himself being a man of faith. And so when Abraham and Lot returned from Egypt, they returned with great wealth. So much so that there was a conflict amongst their herdsmen. There wasn't enough room in the area for both men and all of their flocks and all of their wealth. And so Abraham invited Lot to separate from him so that there wouldn't be strife amongst their herdsmen. And he gave him a choice and he said, you pick and choose where you want to go. And as Justin pointed out, Lot, it says, looked toward Sodom. He looked toward the cities of the Jordan. And boy, it was well watered, almost like the garden of God. And he saw all this great, you know, abundance. And he said, that's where I want to live. Now, the problem was, of course, that it says that the men of Sodom were very wicked, exceedingly wicked. And Lot knew that. And yet it says he pitched his tents towards Sodom. So he went over and moved away from Abraham and lived right near the city of Sodom. And that is the beginning of Lot's downfall, so to speak, or of his problems. We don't read of any problems that Lot had up until this time. In Genesis 14, there's a story of some kings that come against Sodom and Gomorrah, and they take the city captive, and they take all the people captive with them, and Lot is one of them. In Genesis 14, Lot was actually living in Sodom now. He hadn't just pitched his tents towards Sodom. He was now living in the city. And then in Genesis chapter 19, a very interesting chapter, we see some 20 years later, probably, we see Lot in Sodom, at the gates of Sodom. He's actually living in, not living, but actually residing kind of in the gates. So he's a man of influence. That's what that indicates when it says he was in the gates of Sodom. That means he was sitting with the men. He had great influence. He was making decisions, and he was part of the city of Sodom. And that's when God sent two angels to him and to warn him to get out of Sodom because God was going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. I don't think Lot understood that these men were angels when he brought them into his home. He showed them hospitality. He was a good man. He was a godly man in that sense, a kind man. And he protected them even when the men of Sodom came knocking at his door, so to speak, calling for these men to come out so that they might have relations with them. A horrible, perverse thing, and Lot protected them. But you know what he did? Something that I just can't even begin to understand. He offered them his two daughters in place of these two men. He said, "I'll send my two daughters out to you, and you have your way with them and use them however you want. But please don't do this terrible thing of having relations with these two men." I can't even understand that, how he did that. And it's a clue. It's an indication, I think, that there's something wrong with Lot in his thinking. There's something that has been compromised, as Justin said. This compromise began when he pitched his tents towards Sodom, and it continued when he began to live in Sodom, and this the wickedness that was all around him influenced him, I think, and caused him to compromise in a number of different ways. And so we're going to talk about the spiritual decline of righteous Lot this morning and see if we can learn some things from him. You know, as I was reading 2 Peter chapter 2, and I was reading about how Lot was tormented day and night by the lawless deeds around him, no doubt that was part of what was so godly about him. He allowed himself to be tormented by the unrighteousness that was all around him. He saw the wickedness of Sodom. He saw the homosexuality. He saw the carnality, the ungodliness, the wickedness of the city, to the extent even that when Abraham pled with God not to destroy Sodom, if there be 50 righteous men in it, God said, "Okay, if there's 50, I won't destroy it." And Abraham took it down to 40 and negotiated with God all the way down to 10. Got God down to 10. "If there's 10 righteous men in Sodom, I won't destroy it." Abraham was pleading on behalf of Sodom, the wicked city. And I think partly because he knew his nephew Lot was residing there. He didn't want the city to be destroyed. But there weren't 10 men, were there? There weren't 10 people in Sodom who were righteous. Really, when you think about it, when you think about the story and what happened, there's only one. And we'll get to that in just a moment. It was really just Lot in the whole city that was righteous. That's how wicked and evil it was. And I was thinking about this. Here's a man who is tormented. He allows himself to be tormented, vexed. His soul is vexed by all the different ungodliness, ungodly things that are going on in the city. And yet, he's been influenced by it. To the point where he would send his two daughters out? Why didn't he stand strong? Why wasn't he just willing to die even for the sake of righteousness? Why would he send his two daughters out knowing that they would be abused? Now, they weren't. The men refused the two daughters. So fortunately, they weren't abused. that night, but Lot was ready for them to be. What happened? What kind of influence is going on? And I had to ask myself, because my soul is vexed, you know, as I look around me at our society and what's going on. And I'm afraid I'm subject to the information overload that we tend to have in our society today. You know, the internet makes everything so accessible to us, and we can see all the stuff that's being reported on all throughout the world. And boy, you talk about the opportunity to have your soul vexed. You know, it's available to see. And if you see too much of it, it really depresses you, doesn't it? And that's a good thing. I want my soul to be vexed by the ungodliness that I see around me. But then I wonder, am I like Lot? Am I, because I see so much, because maybe even I invite so much into my life, maybe it's all around me, maybe I'm influenced by it, maybe I'm in this ungodly culture too much, and maybe I compromise my convictions, maybe I compromise my character, maybe I'm a lot more like Lot than I would like to admit. And so you see, what I see in Lot is I see grave consequences coming from the compromises that he made that started when he pitched his tent toward Sodom, toward wicked Sodom. Look at his choices. He started out just pitching his tents there. But then in Genesis 14, he's now living in Sodom. And in Genesis 19, he's sitting in the gates. He's now a man of influence there. He's part of the city. And so, yes, his soul is vexed and he's tormented by the ungodliness and wickedness, but he's very much a part of the culture of that wickedness. And then you compare Lot's love of the world with Abraham's mindset that you read about in the Scriptures, and you see how Lot was led by his eyes. You know, he saw that everything looked good. Boy, that looks good. I'm going to go for that. And he didn't really give much thought, did he, to the potential consequences of putting himself into that kind of worldly environment. There's consequences to getting too close to the world, isn't there? To being too much a part of the world, to being intentionally even placing ourselves too close to the wickedness and ungodliness that's around us. You know that verse in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33. Evil companionship corrupts good morals. And that's an axiom. That's like a proverb. That's like a truism. It just means what it says, what it means. It means what it says. Watch out. You can get too close. You can have too many close companions, so to speak, that'll take you farther than you would ever want to go, or cause you to compromise your convictions or your character. Evil companionship corrupts good morals. You look at Abraham, how he was a citizen in a house. Lot was a citizen in a house in Sodom versus Abraham, a pilgrim, a sojourner, living in a tent, content to look for the heavenly city, whereas Lot was looking for that earthly city. Interesting contrast, I think, between Lot and Abraham. And even Abraham, of course, compromised his character and his convictions at times when he offered up his wife to a king in order to preserve his life. Even Abraham was not perfect in that regard. But then you look not only at the gradual decline, and I think before we move into this point here about his spiritual decline being destructive, maybe it'd be wise to talk about this gradual decline a little bit practically. You know, when you think about people getting to a certain point in their lives where all of a sudden you find out that they're in sin, and you don't understand that. You know, Brother so-and-so is a good man. He comes to church every Sunday, you know, and I had no idea. And all of a sudden, Brother so-and-so is living in adultery, or he's in drunkenness or drugs or some form of carnality or lying or stealing or whatever it may be. The point is what? The point I think we learn from Lot's situation is it doesn't just happen like that, does it? It's a gradual thing. And that's what we got to be careful about. We got to be able to see that in ourselves. Are we gradually moving further and further away from God? And we talk about things like reading our Bible. We talk about prayer. We talk about attendance. Just basic fundamental things like attending the services. And, you know, we make a big deal out of attendance. Why? Because it's the one visible sign. I don't know what your prayer life's like. I don't know what your Bible study habits are. I don't know how close you are to God. I don't know the nature of your conversation and your lifestyle at home. I don't know any of that. So it's hard for me to know. You know, are you having difficulty? Do you need some encouragement? Are you growing weak? But I'll tell you one thing I can see. I can see when you're not here. And guess what that tells me? There's a problem. Do you believe that? Do you really believe that? I do. I believe that with all my heart. I think there's a big problem spiritually. I think it's a big warning signal. I'm not trying to be judgmental or condemnatory about this. I'm talking about the gradual decline that comes spiritually because, and this is one of the signs, we're not really that interested in spiritual things if we're not attending the services. It's just a fact. Now, there may be, I'm not talking about health reasons. I'm not talking about, you know, what's the word? I don't know. The things you can't help. I'm not talking about that. But there's a problem. And there's a weakness. And it could be a signal that you're going downhill, not uphill. You know, in other words, not toward God, but away from God. And so it is, I think, with Lot. Lot began that gradual decline. And look what it resulted in, ultimately. He lost his entire family to sin. His two sons-in-law just laughed at him when he told them that God was going to destroy Sodom. They wouldn't even listen to him. His two daughters went out with him and his wife. His wife looked back and turned into a pillar of salt. Her heart was in Sodom. His two daughters ended up committing incest with him in order to have children. They got him drunk. And he got so drunk on two consecutive nights that both of his daughters committed incest with him. What kind of a family life was this for Lot? Look at the consequences of this gradual decline. Yes, it was indeed destructive. It was a destructive compromise. He compromised his righteous convictions. He chose to be accepted in the gates rather than to rebuke the sin or to separate from it. I can understand that. He's living in the city now. Well, let's move into the city. You know, it'll be better for us economically or whatever reasons he had. Now, all of a sudden, he's in the city. He's part of it. Wickedness all around him. Soul's tormented. He's sorely vexed by everything he's seeing around him. But he wants to have an influence. Maybe that's what he was thinking. So he sits in the gates with the men. What kind of an influence did he have? What price did he pay for righteousness? Did he stand up and reprove and rebuke? If he had, what would have happened? You know, he probably lost his life. I mean, these are men of the most violent and carnal and wicked nature. He probably would have lost his life. So the indication is he didn't. He sat in the gates, but he didn't really do much. He didn't really influence Sodom at all. And then, that's the only explanation I can really think of as to why he would be so weak and so unspiritual and so ungodly that he would offer his two daughters to these wicked men who came to his door. It was a compromise for certain. And he compromised his righteous character protecting his guests, but then offering up his daughters. Compromised his convictions, which led to a compromise in his character, which led to a heinous action. Did he ever imagine in the world that he would do something like that? Can anybody ever plan for such a thing? Can anybody ever project that kind of decision or choice? No, but it was a gradual decline and a compromise of character and a compromise of convictions little by little as he lived in this wicked city. And his influence, it was non-existent. He had no influence on Sodom as he sat in the gates. The men that came to his door said, "This is a stranger who came to us years ago and now he's going to sit in judgment on us." That was their attitude toward him. He hadn't had a whole lot of influence on them, had he? They just saw him as somebody to be dismissed. He just thinks he's our judge. So how'd it go for you, Lot? In Sodom. He had little influence on his own family. In Genesis 19, verses 12 through 15, it talks about how the angels warned him to get out and to take his whole family with him. And he went to his sons-in-laws and talked to them about it. And they just mocked him. They thought he was kidding. They wouldn't listen to him. So he had no influence on them at all. And then in verse 16, we get a little bit of a picture here about what's going on with Lot. Lot himself is a little bit more, or maybe a lot more like his wife than we are given to think usually. Oh, it's the wife. She turned back and looked back and she was turned into a pillar of salt. But you know what? When the angels came and in the morning to get Lot, hurry him up, get out of here. The Lord's going to just... It says he lingered. He lingered. They had to grab him. They had to take him by the hand and they had to drag him out of the city. Lot. Maybe there was a little bit of love of the world going on in Lot as well. A love of the comforts, a love of the city. He didn't want to leave any more than his wife did, perhaps. "Please know, my lords," he says. "Let this not be." He didn't want to go. His wife gets the bad rep. You know, she looks back and turns into a pillar of salt. God had specifically warned them not to look back. And she blatantly disobeyed God's command, looked back and was turned into a pillar of salt. But I just wonder, was Lot really a whole lot different in many respects? Because of the influence of the city around him, that he had intentionally put himself in the midst of. And so we see the destructive consequences as we look in Genesis chapter 19 and verses 30 through 36. Genesis 19, I'll read this with you. Genesis 19 and verse 30. Lot went up from Zoar and stayed in the mountains and his two daughters with him, for he was afraid to stay in Zoar, and he stayed in a cave, he and his two daughters. And let me pause there. Where was Lot told to go? He was afraid to go there. But the angels told him, direct message from God, "You go and stay in Zoar." But Lot didn't do that. He was afraid to do that. So I wonder, weak faith, little faith. God told him what to do. He didn't do it. Instead, went up into the mountains to a cave, he and his two daughters. And so now they're isolated. Now they're all alone. And Sodom and Gomorrah have been destroyed. And it says in verse 31, "Then the firstborn said to the younger, 'Our father is old, and there's not a man on earth to come into us after the manner of the earth.'" That wasn't true. There were people all around. There just wasn't a man in Sodom and Gomorrah any longer. He says, "Come, let us make our father drink wine and let us lie with him that we may preserve our family through our father." And so they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father. And he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. That's how drunk he was. On the following day, the firstborn said to the younger, "Behold, I lay last night with my father. Let us make him drink wine tonight also." and then you go in and lie with him that we may preserve our family through our father. And so they made their father drink wine that night also, and the younger arose and lay with him, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. And thus both the daughters of Lot were with child by their father. The firstborn bore a son and called his name Moab. He's the father of the Moabites to this day. And as for the younger, she also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ammi. He is the father of the sons of Ammon to this day. The irony there and the consequences there are that Moab and Ammon, you might recognize those names, became the arch enemies of Israel when they tried to enter into the promised land. And they dealt with Moab and Ammon for many, many years. They were part of the Canaanites around them. So you see the consequences of Lot's family. So what do we learn from all of this? What do we take away from the story of Lot? How do we apply this to our lives? I think there's a lot to think about here in terms of how we view our relationship to the world around us, in view of the choices that we make in our lives. And I can't just spell it all out and say, all right, based on this, here's what we need to do. But I think we need to think about that. I think a lot of families do think about that. I think a lot of families make choices oftentimes based upon these very principles that we're looking at this morning. How separated from the world am I going to be? I'm called by God to be separate, to come out from among them and be ye separate, and I will be a father to you, and you will be sons and daughters to me. That's what God says. Come out and be separate. There's no communion. There's no fellowship. There's nothing in common between righteousness and lawlessness, between good and evil. There's no fellowship. There's no sharing. There's no participation between light and darkness. God's warning us repeatedly. Come out. Come out. Lot went into. And it just got worse and worse and worse for him. And the consequences were severe to himself and to his family. So some people will make some pretty difficult choices in their lives because of these very principles. And some people won't think much about them at all. And that's the fear. We got to be warned. God's warning us. And He uses Lot as a great example of one, yes, who could be counted righteous, and yes, who was called godly, because he was tormented and vexed by the world around him. And I hear people say that all the time. But what about your choices? Are your choices reflecting that? Are you separating from this world, or are you immersed in it? Do you bring it into your living room? Do you care little for the fact that so much ungodliness and immorality and profanity and humanism is being thrown at your children in the public schools? Do you compensate for that? Do you take care for the influence of the world around you and compensate for it with your children? How do you protect them from it? Do you have any protection on your children's phones or on their computers? How protected are they from the world around them? We're living in Sodom, ladies and gentlemen, to a great extent. We're living in Sodom. And we better take the warning, I think, of the story of Lot to understand there are severe, destructive consequences that can come if we don't take heed and pay attention and separate ourselves as much as we can from the world around us. I'll stop there with my exhortation. That would be a good subject, wouldn't it, to sit around and talk about and share wisdom on and think about and just share ideas with and share concerns with, wouldn't it? It'd be a real good subject to do that with. And we should do that privately. All right, I appreciate your good attention this morning. I guess I'll finish by just acknowledging the fact that in spite of Lot's weaknesses, in spite of his bad choices, he's a righteous man. I believe he was saved in heaven through the blood of Christ because he lived by faith. Because even though he made bad choices, even though he suffered grave consequences, he was a godly man. He did allow himself to be sorely vexed and tormented day and night by the world around him. He didn't want to make all these bad decisions. He just did. And God saved him anyway. And what kind of lesson do we learn from that? Not the one that you can just do whatever you want and don't worry about it. You'll get to heaven anyway. That's not the lesson. The lesson is there are severe consequences to our choices. But if we've made bad choices, if we've done wrong things, if we've joined ourselves to the world and we've suffered for that, we can come out of that. We can repent of that. We can be godly. We can be righteous. We can be saved because of the grace of God. And that was the lesson last week with Samson. Even Samson was saved. Even Lot was saved. And that's the grace of God. And so if there's one lesson I take from this, it's that I'm never going to give up. I may make some bad choices. I may suffer some consequences. I may even find out that my character has been compromised and I haven't held to my convictions very well. But I'm not going to give up because I know God, who is gracious and merciful and patient, and He will save me if I will let Him. And so I'll try to remain faithful all the days of my life and repent when I find myself in error. And that's the message of the gospel. So if you're here this morning and you're not yet a Christian, that's the message of the gospel. God is calling you through His grace and His mercy to obey Him, to obey the gospel, to put your faith and trust in Him. If you're already a Christian and you have fallen away from the Lord is calling you back. Put your faith and trust in Me, accept My grace and accept My mercy, and I will forgive you. That's the beauty of the gospel of Jesus Christ. So if you'd like to be baptized into Christ this morning, if you're not a Christian, we stand ready to help you as we stand and sing.
Jesus called the darkness.